Thanks so much, everybody, for coming. My voice doesn't project very well, so if I forget to yell, wave at me and remind me to speak up. I am 40 years old, and exactly 2 months I'll be 41, so I'm the same age as Laura, who spoke last time, but I don't have any kids, so. I've been going to Church on the Rock for about 4 years. I definitely have a gifting of helps. I really love to help out, and I do projector and video and the nursery and children's church, and up until recently I did the youth group as well. I do work from home full time. I am a training specialist for a mortgage financing company, but please don't assume that I'm an expert on mortgages, because I am definitely not. My expertise is more in creating training, so PowerPoints and videos and how adults learn and all that. So I work with subject matter experts who give me the content for my trainings. I've been with this company for 9.5 years, and I absolutely love my job. And the company is based out of San Diego, which is where Joseph and I moved here from 4 years ago. Okay, so my testimony. I could seriously fill a book with everything that God has done in my life. Like, it's amazing. One thing I've always wanted was just a normal life, and I've stopped praying that because it's obvious that I don't get to have a normal life. So I narrowed it down to my top three testimonies. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kind of jump around in the timeline, and just so I can cover each story individually. But my top three testimonies are, God delivered me from an eating disorder, God healed me of breast cancer, and God gave me a husband. So, so I was born in Morgantown, West Virginia in December of 1980. If you don't know what that is, like, an hour south of Pittsburgh, right at the top of West Virginia. And my parents were really young. My mom was 19, my dad was 21, and they were attending a Church of Christ at the time, which doesn't believe in the gifts of the Spirit, if you don't know anything about Church of Christ. They were baptized there, they got married there, and they continued to go there while I was still a baby. And then they decided, it became very controlling at one point, so they stopped going to the church. And unfortunately did not go and seek another church. My mom decided to become an atheist at that point and is still an atheist to this day. And so it was really my dad that taught me about Jesus. He has started going back to church these last few years. He's not been going to Church of Christ, thankfully. He's been going to a non-denominational church. So that's been really good for him. So at some point, my mom fell out of love with my dad. And my dad tried to stay with my mom until I was done with high school, but he didn't make it, and they ended up getting divorced when I was 9 years old. And it was a complete shock to me, total shock, because they never, ever fought in front of me. They were, you know, not affectionate with one another, but I didn't know any better, so I thought that was normal. But it was a total shock when they got divorced. And my dad ended up joining the military for 4 years, and then after that he settled in the Palm Bay, Melbourne area. So he's been here since then, so 25 plus years. They both remarried pretty quickly after their divorce, about a year and a half, I'd say. They were both remarried. My mom, unfortunately, married someone who ended up being verbally and emotionally abusive to me and my mother. And that was right when I was going through puberty. So it was kind of a shock to my system to have my parents divorce, my loving, doting father gone, and this new man who was verbally abusive to us. And so at that point, I started turning to food as my coping mechanism, as a way to make myself feel better. And back then, it was always, you know, in school and health class or whatever, they would show videos about anorexia and bulimia. And I was like, well, I don't starve myself and I don't throw up, so I guess I'm fine. And I never really thought anything of it. And binge eating disorder actually wasn't a diagnosis until the year 2013. So it's still fairly new, but it's been around a long time. It's basically bulimia without the purging part. So I just binge eat. And for me, what it felt like was, my full meter was broken. So you know that feeling you get after you've eaten a meal and you're satisfied and full? I didn't get that feeling. And I would also get like a high off of it. And I've never done drugs, but I would assume it would be something like that, similar, where that's why they do drugs, to get that high feeling. And that's what it would do for me. And then I also had this like constant noise. And when I, you know, was finally learning how to try to control my eating disorder, it was like I would binge and it would get really quiet. And so the noise would just slowly peak back up until it was just like screeching in my ears and I couldn't take it anymore and just felt suffocated. And then I would binge again and it would get quiet again. So it was like I would do good for about a week and then it would just get so loud that I would fall back into it again. It was just horrible, like this constant torture. So I gave my life to God in 2012, right before my 32nd birthday. And I'll come back to that later and talk about that more. But after that, God started showing me that I was really unhealthy and what my behavior was really unhealthy. And I went from a job where I was on my feet all day long to a job where I was sitting all day long. And I started having a lot of stomach issues. I felt like I had rocks in my stomach and I was in so much pain. I thought I was dying. So I went to the doctor. And I was just diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome and told to exercise more, which was not helpful. And so this was really when the binging was at its peak. I mean, my diet consisted of nothing but carbs and sugars. It was really bad. And then I noticed my fatigue. I started getting super fatigued and I would sleep all the time. So I would go to work, come home, binge, go to sleep the rest of the evening. I mean, it was horrible. You know, Saturdays I slept all day. Sunday I did start going to church at this point, and but then I would come home and rest for the rest of the day. And then I started getting all these other symptoms too. I started having rashes, you know, still have stomach issues, constipation, diarrhea, gas, brain fog, depression, anxiety, irritability, hormone imbalance, just all these really weird, annoying symptoms. So they weren't anything, wasn't anything life threatening, but it was seriously debilitating. And then God hooked me up with somebody who knew what I was going through so they could finally get some help. And I got a new coworker at work, and I was talking to her one day about what I was experiencing and the way I was eating and everything and how I was feeling. And she was like, "Oh my goodness, it sounds like what you have, what me and my son have." And that was when I learned about Candida albicans, or like a Candida overgrowth, or yeast, and leaky gut. Learned about all of that. If you don't know what that is, basically, you have good bacteria and bad bacteria in your gut. And when you eat all those sugars and you're really stressed and all of that, the bad bacteria grows out of control. And then that it's basically yeast, and it lines the walls of your gut, and then it like makes the walls of your gut super thin, and then stuff starts leaching out into your bloodstream, which is really bad because it's all like toxic and all this stuff, and that just runs havoc on your immune system. So that's why I was getting all these weird, crazy symptoms. So that's what leaky gut is. And then God pointed me to a book called the Candida Diet Book. And it seemed absolutely impossible. I was like, there is no way I can do this diet. You basically have to cut out all carbs, all sugars. All you can eat is vegetables and meat and a little bit of nuts, and that's it. Like, you are very strict diet. So I was like, I can't do this. So I did like other quote miracle cures that I found on the internet. They just wasted my time and my money and didn't work. So I finally bought the book. And through a lot of struggles, a lot of starts and stops, I was finally able to stay on the diet for about a year. And I was doing really well. I was feeling a lot better. I learned all about proper nutrition and even how to cook. I mean, everything I ate was packaged, just prepackaged in some way. And now it's like, okay, I know how to cook things like, you know, zucchini and bell peppers and chicken, and able to eat better. And things actually tasted good. Like, even bell peppers tasted so sweet to me at that point. Well, I was still binging, unfortunately. I was binging on the nuts. So you could have a little bit of nuts, and those have carbs in them. So then I would end up binging on those. And at this point, I still don't realize that I have a binge eating disorder. I still didn't even know about binge eating disorder. So God showed me that I had an addiction to sugar. And then he wanted me to go to Celebrate Recovery. And if you don't know what Celebrate Recovery is, it's a 12-step program like Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's Christian. So Jesus is the higher power, and it's for anybody. Any problem, struggle you're having, you can go to Celebrate Recovery. So it took me a few months to really work up the nerve, and I finally went. And it was amazing. My first night there, it was such a small group. I remember we did some stuff at the beginning, and then we broke up into two groups, men and women. And there was only four of us women there. And, you know, we all got to share. When they came to me, I, you know, told them that I had addiction to sugar. And they were like, oh, yeah, there's another girl that comes sometimes, and she has the same problem. And I just started crying. And they were like, oh, my God, what's wrong? And I'm like, it was the first time somebody had actually acknowledged that it was a problem. And it was like everybody, you know, I didn't share it with too many people. I was so ashamed. But, like, the people that I had shared it with were like, why can't you just stop? Why don't you just stop eating? Like, it was some kind of a discipline problem. And I knew it wasn't a weakness. I knew it wasn't a discipline problem because I had stayed on that diet for so long. I knew I had the self-discipline to be able to conquer it. And I didn't understand why I was still doing this unhealthy behavior. So anyway, it just was so amazing to finally meet some people where I didn't have to prove to them that this was a problem. So I continued to go, and Melanie was the female leader of the group. It was a man and wife team, a husband and wife team that led it up, and I started meeting with Melanie once a week and to go through the 12 steps, and we just mostly did a lot of talking, and she just truly showed me what it meant to be loved unconditionally, and she just poured into me like you would not believe. So many hours I spent with her talking, and we dealt with a lot of my issues, a lot of stuff that during that time, but I was still binging, and I was like, I knew like God could take this away, you know? I was like, we just got to come to that one thing, that one issue, and cross that off, and then it'll go away. It'll just fall off of me. So I kept holding on to that. And at some point, God showed me finally that it was an eating disorder. And so that felt good to just get a diagnosis of it. And then I was meeting with Melanie for about 10 months, and then my stepmom passed away. So at that point, Joseph and I moved to Florida, and I'll talk more about that later. So I stopped seeing Melanie, of course, and then I started attending Celebrate Recovery at Calvary Chapel, which was good. There's not a whole lot of power there. But then I also found a support group for eating disorders. There's actually a therapist here in Melbourne that focuses specifically on eating disorders. So I was able to go to that support group, meet other women who were battling eating disorders as well. She taught us about mindfulness, which was, meditation is kind of a part of mindfulness, but mindfulness is more about being in the present moment, like focusing on your five senses and being more in that present moment rather than stressing out, thinking about all of your anxieties and fears and all of that. And then we talked about triggers too, and she talked about how, you know, we were all like, oh, well, everything's a trigger because any kind of strong emotion triggered our eating disorders. And so the mindfulness helped because it helped us to separate our emotions and our feelings so that we could use them as a tool, which is what God meant them to be. He didn't mean for us to be led around by our emotions and feelings, but that they're to be used as a tool to say, oh, I'm feeling this way. What do I need to do with that? So that was extremely helpful, learning about mindfulness. It also is about recognizing your emotions, validating them, and deciding logically what to do with those. So it's about self-compassion, which was the first time I'd ever heard somebody say self-compassion, and I was like, wow, yeah. Like, you're supposed to talk to yourself the way you would talk to someone that you love. But I started seeing Lucy one-on-one after that support group ended. And I also started to take an SSRI, which is a type of antidepressant medication that also helps with binge eating disorder. And I remember I was just at my wit's end, and I was sitting there during our session, and I was just crying because I was doing everything that she had taught me. I was doing everything I had learned, everything I was supposed to be doing, and I was still binging. So basically the world was telling me that I was always going to have this problem, and I knew my God was bigger, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to settle for that. You know, that I've been having this for 25 years. I'm not going to settle. Like, God can get rid of this. So I just sat there and cried. She's not a Christian, so she couldn't, you know, relate to my feelings about God taking it away. But anyway, so like I said, I would do well for about a week, and then I'd end up binging because the noise would just get so unbearable. All right, so now that I had done every possible thing I could do in the physical realm, God decided to get to work. And so that very night, that same day that I met with Lucy, that very night was the very first breakthrough prayer meeting at Church on the Rock. And I remember Carl was there, and he came up to the mic and he said, like, he felt like someone there was kept falling back into sin, that they would do well for a little while and then they'd fall back into sin. And I knew that was me. So I went up, and it was Carl and Lori and Robert, and I confessed to them that I had an eating disorder, and that was all I said, and they started to pray for me. While they were praying for me, God told me that an evil spirit was at the root of my eating disorder. And I asked him to confirm that through the people praying for me. And then a couple minutes later, God confirmed it through Robert. And then I just got this overwhelming urge to hug Lori. It was like I could not hug Lori. It's like Holy Spirit just came on me and was like, you have to. And I was like, I don't want to. I want them to keep praying for me. And he's like, no, you need to hug Lori. So I finally turned to her and hugged her. And it was through that hug that God revealed to me that I was holding on to unforgiveness toward my mother, that I felt she should have protected me from her second husband. But God told me that he provided for me where she couldn't, and that she did the best that she could. And I was able to forgive my mother through that. Hallelujah. And now I have nothing but love for her. I didn't even realize that I was holding on to this unforgiveness, and God had to show me that I was. And it was like this huge weight was gone. And so since then, the screaming, the noise is gone. That has not ever come back. I've tried to binge, and I can't do it. Like, I can't get that same high feeling. And then I have a full meter now. Like, my full meter actually kicks on, and I'm like, oh, I'm full now. Okay, I can stop. It's pretty amazing. Obviously, I don't eat the way that I should still, but I'm working on that, and it's not like I just eat sugar right now. Like, this had more to do with going through breast cancer, so I'll talk more about that. But I'm working on that. And so why didn't God heal me right away? Well, he wanted me to learn all that stuff along the way. Look at how much I learned. You know, I learned how to eat properly, how to cook, how to deal with my strong emotions, about mindfulness, and how to see my mom the way he sees my mom. So not only did he heal the binging, but healed all this other stuff in me through that. So that's my binge eating testimony. Next is about my breast cancer. I first felt a lump in my left breast around summer 2017. I was only 36 years old, and I didn't think too much of it. My mom, her mom, her sisters, they'd all had breast lumps removed that were non-cancerous. So I really just was like, okay, it's my turn to have a breast lump removed. I think my mom was even like 32 when she had her first one removed. I don't remember now, but I was scared of having it removed. I was a big baby, and I ignored it. And then a couple months later, my dad called me. It was on a Saturday, and my stepmom had been battling cervical cancer for 5 years. And he said that the chemo was no longer working, so they were going to stop the chemo. And he said she was doing okay. She was at home. She was on oxygen, but they felt like maybe she had another month or so left. So as soon as I hung up the phone with him, I was like, I need to go to Florida. I'm his only child. I need to go there and be with him through this transition, help take care of her, help him transition. I mean, they're so young, you know, for her to pass away then. So I really just wanted to go help. I went to talk to Joseph. I told him, you know, I want to be gone about 6 months to a year, but I wanted him to come with me. And he just said, let's go. So we packed up to go. After I talked to Joseph, I was like, well, maybe I need to stop and talk to God. I'm like, wait a minute. I need to talk to God about this first. And so when I prayed about it, God was like, God just gave me this, he had an overwhelming sense of pride for me. Like, he was just so proud of me for making that decision. And then he gave me the scripture verse, honor thy father and mother. And I thought, what better way to honor my dad than to go there and help him through this? And then God also said that he was going to bless all three of us through this, meaning me, Joseph, and my dad. And I didn't know what that meant at the time. So that was a Saturday. Monday, I went to work that morning. I was, you know, still going in the office in San Diego, and I worked it out with my boss where they were going to let me work remotely from Florida. So everything was worked out, and we were making plans to move. And then Tuesday morning, my dad called and told me my stepmom had passed already. So within like 4 days, it was already done. So we got through the funeral, still decided to go to Florida. We got rid of most of our stuff and loaded up our two cars and drove across the country. We actually got here the day before Hurricane Irma hit in September 2017, if you remember that. Of course, everybody in San Diego was like, come back, come back. And we're like, yeah, it'll be fine. So we stayed with my dad. We got settled in, and then I noticed that the lump was growing. So I decided to go to the doctor finally and get it checked out. So the doctor scheduled me for my very first mammogram. Remember, I'm only 36 years old. I haven't had a mammogram yet. And she also scheduled me for an ultrasound. And then they said, yeah, we need to biopsy this. The whole time I'm just thinking, okay, yeah, you need to biopsy my non-cancerous lump. You know, it's all right. So, but anyway, the breast biopsy day was the worst day. You're basically laying on your back like this with your arm up in the air, and I was so sore afterwards from laying like that for so long. But they basically like drilled down into my breast to pull out the biopsy. And then they used an ultrasound, and they checked my lymph nodes as well in my armpits, and they said a couple of the lymph nodes looked suspicious, so they biopsied one of those as well. And I just remember my nurse, God always gives me a comforter, and my nurse, her name was Anne, she just laid her hand on my lower leg and just kept it there the whole time. And I told her after, I'm like, that was the most comforting thing in the entire world, because it was just so uncomfortable with this strange man, you know, working on my breast. So that was weird. Where'd I go? And so the doctor told me, he said, do not wait to schedule an appointment with a surgeon. He said, you know, schedule your appointment before you leave here. And I'm still like, okay, so I get to have my non-cancerous lump removed. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And then he said he was very concerned. And it took me a few minutes to let that sink in. And I was like, what do you mean you're very concerned? And he explained that there's three different grades of cancer. And grade one, it still looks like breast tissue. So, but then by the time you get to grade three, it looks like, it doesn't look like breast tissue anymore. It looks like cancer. And he said, based on his observation of the biopsy, that he was 90% sure that it was cancer. And I was just like, going in my head, I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm 36 years old. How can I have cancer? Like, that's insane. Who gets breast cancer when they're 36? Well, anyway, I had the next week to really process the fact that I had cancer. And so when I went to the surgeon and he confirmed it, it was not a shock. And he said that there's three treatment options available. There's surgery, chemo, and radiation. And he suggested all three. He told me I wasn't eligible for a lumpectomy at that point because the lump was so large it would have left a very deformed breast. And he scheduled an appointment with an oncologist who was awful and I fired. That's a whole nother story. But the next couple months, I had to go through all these different tests to find out how far the cancer had spread. So they knew it had already spread to a lymph node. What they wanted to know is that it had spread any further than that. Because your lymph nodes are kind of like gateways where they stop all that bad stuff from going through. And if it gets past your lymph node, then it can go to like your liver, your brain, your heart, and it, that's when it's bad. And basically, you know, if it's gone past those lymph nodes, then your survival rate drops significantly. So the next 2 months were torture, going through test after test after test. It was awful. Finally, they told me that it hadn't spread past those two lymph nodes, so I was diagnosed with stage 2B, ERPR positive, HER2 negative, BRCA negative. If you don't know what that means, don't worry about it. Basically, I think it was like a 90% survival rate, so good chances there. And so I did chemo first. I got 8 treatments of chemo over 4 months, so every other week I would go get chemo. And the chemo eradicated the cancer. Like, it kicked its butt. And at that point, I was actually eligible for a lumpectomy. But I chose not to. I chose to do the mastectomy just because of the breast lumps that ran in my family. I was like, I don't want to go through 100 more biopsies and all this stress and everything. So I was like, just get rid of them. And then after my mastectomy, I had 28 treatments of radiation, which was the easiest part. You just go every day for like 15 minutes and you're done. I also had my ovaries removed since I was premenopausal and my cancer grew faster from hormones, from estrogen. It was recommended to have my ovaries removed. And I like to say I was violently shoved into menopause. I don't recommend it to anybody. It was pretty awful for me. I gained 40 pounds in 2 months after I had my ovaries removed. And the hot flashes were about the death of me. but anyway, it is finally starting to get better. But where was God through all of that, right? So let's talk about the testimony part. Before I was officially diagnosed, I went to the healing room, and that's where I met Sandy. And she and Carla and Mark, if you remember them, some of you may remember them, Carla and Mark prayed for me. Almost as soon as they started praying for me, I went down. I couldn't move. And Sandy will tell you, I couldn't even talk. I would talk like this. Like, I couldn't, like, my whole body just felt tingly, and I just could not move. And I was like, God's doing something. I don't know what he's doing, but he's doing something. So my hope was that he was healing me, but I don't know. I actually felt a lot of tingling around my liver, and one of the tests that they ran, they found a spot on my liver. So I'm my theory is that maybe it had spread to my liver, and God healed my liver, you know, so that I could go through the treatment. I don't know. That's my theory. I don't know that it's the correct one, but anyway, whatever God did that day, it was awesome. I never felt closer to God. And then there are also a lot of treatment options being thrown at me. So there's all kinds of holistic, homeopathic remedies, miracle cures out there. And it was just overwhelming. I was like, God, I don't know. I don't know what treatment option to pick. And so it was at that point God told me that he was going to heal me no matter what. And he said that there would be a bigger blessing if I would go through the treatment options that my surgeon had laid out. So the surgery, chemo, and radiation. And so, of course, I said, I want the bigger blessing. And that was the treatment plan that I went with. I also got hooked into a breast cancer support group with women who were going through exactly the same thing as me, who were actually my age. There weren't very many of us, but that was invaluable. I don't know that I would have made it through everything without that group, because they had so much, it was so much camaraderie as well as information. Like, doctors were really great about answering questions, but if you didn't know what questions to ask, they didn't offer information. So it was, I needed that group just to understand what I was going through and know what questions to ask my doctors. I also told God that I wasn't strong enough. You know, one of the big reasons I didn't want to have any babies was because I didn't want to go through childbirth. Like, and look, I was scared to even get the lumpectomy. Like, I was such a big baby. And I wasn't strong. I knew I wasn't strong enough. And I looked to my mom and my stepmom, and you know how my stepmom had battled cervical cancer for 5 years. Even before that, she was a formidable force. And my mother had had this horrible childhood, and she was just insanely strong. And I was like, God, I am not strong like them. And so he told me that they had gone through some stuff that made them strong, and now I was going to go through some stuff to make me strong. And then my favorite part of that, my favorite God testimony, is about my lymph nodes. So you have lymph nodes all over your body. Like I said, they're those gates that stop bad stuff from going through. So they're really important, right? God designed us to have lymph nodes. We need our lymph nodes. And all the women in my support group had had lymph nodes removed. Even those that it hadn't spread to their lymph nodes, they would have two or three lymph nodes removed. And then the women who it had spread to the lymph nodes, they would have 10 to 15 lymph nodes removed just in this area, and they'd end up with lymphedema. So that's just the swelling. And basically, I mean, it's debilitating. There's no cure for it. They have to wear these compression sleeves to help the swelling go down. And they can't lift anything. Like, they can't lift their purse with that arm. They can't lift a gallon of milk with that arm. Like, it's bad. And I was like, I've prayed so fervently, God, please do not let them take any of my lymph nodes. Because I was just like, I'm going to live for a long time after this. I don't want to have to deal with this. And I prayed so fervently. And I even talked to my surgeon. I told him, I was like, I don't want to have any lymph nodes removed. Like, I don't want to have any lymph nodes removed. And he was like, basically said he'd be doing me a disservice if he didn't remove them. And so I went into surgery just like, okay, I'm just going to trust you, God. You know, I know you got it. And when I woke up, the first thing Joseph told me was they didn't remove any lymph nodes. And he took a picture of me. I have like this huge smile on my face. And then my surgeon came in and talked to me later, and he said that he couldn't even find my lymph nodes. Like, that's how awesome God is. Like, he just hid my lymph nodes from him. And I have lymph nodes, so I even got to prove it. So after that, I went, you know, I had to have radiation. Well, my radiation oncologist was not happy that they didn't remove any lymph nodes. And when they did the biopsy, they had left a marker, a little metal marker, on that lymph node that they had removed. Or that they had biopsied, sorry. And so he was like, well, let's just go see if we can at least find that one lymph node and remove that one lymph node. I'm like, sure, whatever. Like, I was going to tell him, you know, no, I'm not going to have it removed. But I was like, let's go check it out. Let's go have the ultrasound. So they're doing the ultrasound, and they're like, oh, yeah, there's a lymph node. There's a lymph node. There's a lymph node. Like, I have all kinds of lymph nodes. But they couldn't tell which one it was. So they all just looked white on the ultrasound, and so I didn't have to have any removed. So yay, God, that he did that for me. Okay, so that's my breast cancer testimony. And then lastly is my how God gave me a husband. So remember how I told you my parents were going to a Church of Christ, right? And they were married in a Church of Christ. I ended up going back to that church when I was in my early 20s. And I was water baptized there. And I stayed there about a year. The one thing I couldn't understand was the role of women in that church. Women were only allowed to teach women and children, and that's it. They weren't allowed to pass collection plates. They weren't allowed to be greeters. The worship consisted of a single man, because there's no instruments in a Church of Christ. There's no instrumental. And so a single man led worship, and I was just like, why is this like this? And I talked to leadership, I talked to other women, and nobody could give me a good answer that really settled with me. The only scripture they could give me was in Timothy, where Paul tells Timothy that these women need to be quiet. That was the only scripture they could give me. I'm like, what are all these other scriptures of women doing stuff? Yeah, they were blinded. I don't know. So I prayed about it. I mean, even my dad was telling me that that was biblical and that was the truth. And so I prayed about it for about a year. And I'm like, God, I need you to show me, help me to understand what this means, you know, help me to accept this. And finally, God answered me one day. And all he said was, I have more for you. Yeah. So not that they were wrong, just I have more for you. Well, unfortunately, I stopped, you know, I slowly pulled myself away from that church, and I didn't start going to another church. I don't know why. I don't know why I didn't. I don't know. I guess I just, that made me feel bad. I don't know. And so I was just kind of doing my own thing after that. When I was 27, I'd been dating this guy for about a year. We weren't living together at the time, but then he decided to move to California. And I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds cool. I'll go with you. So we're going to move to California. And God told me not to live with him, though. He was like, you can move to California, just don't live with him. And I'm like, well, that's crazy because it's super expensive in California. And we don't know anybody there. We don't have any family or friends or anything there. Like, why wouldn't we live together? And so, of course, I ignored God stupidly. And after about a month, the guy decided to move back home to West Virginia. So here I was stuck in a two-bedroom apartment that I couldn't afford. And so I had to move into a smaller apartment. I was super depressed, super lonely. I ended up meeting this guy who ends up taking advantage of me. He's a super narcissist, manipulator, user, controller, whole big mess. He basically moved in my apartment, like, on our first date and wouldn't leave. And the only thing he ever paid for was our very first date. Did not see a dime from him. And I tried to get him out in every way that I could. I finally just had to file papers with the court, and then he finally moved out. After that, I started dating guys I met online. All I really wanted was to be married. I wanted that more than anything. And I just thought, if I give the guy everything he wants, then he'll eventually ask me to marry him and we'll live happily ever after. Well, I finally gave up. I finally, at the end of 2012, right before my 32nd birthday, that's when I cried out to God. And I was like, God, all I want is a husband. I don't know what I need. I didn't have a type. I dated any type of guy. And I was like, I need you to pick him for me because you're the creator of the universe. You know what I need. And so God told me to stop dating for a while and just to get to know him. So I started dating God. And then a few months later, he told me to go to this church right down the road from my apartment. And so I went, and I'll tell you, it was a Pentecostal church. And if I would have known that, I would not have gone. And I was like, whoa, there's people speaking in tongues here, you know. But I actually really liked it. I loved it there. And about a month later, I got baptized in the Holy Spirit during one of their Sunday morning worship services. And after that, every single worship service, I would go in there and just tears would stream down my face the whole time. People would look at me like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm really good. And then I started attending the Sunday morning Bible class, too, right before church. And one of the men in the Bible class actually directed the Bethlehem story each winter. So instead of doing like a church play for Christmas, they would set up a little town of Bethlehem right there in their parking lot. It was so cool. They would have live animals. They would have stands where you could like do pottery and stuff, like all this crazy stuff. And they would like Mary and Joseph would come in, you know, Mary on the donkey, and she'd give birth to Jesus. And then the angel Gabriel would come up and announce Jesus' birth, and all the angels would come up. And so he asked me to be an angel. You know, apparently I look all sweet and innocent. So he asked me to be an angel. And so I said, okay. And then, so after that, God told me that he had a husband for me. And that he told me three things about my future husband. He told me that my husband would see me dressed as an angel in Bethlehem story. He told me that his name would be something like James or Jason. And I don't know why he didn't tell me the actual name. That's, I don't know. Who knows the thoughts of God? And then God told me that I would need to be patient. And I thought, well, what do I need to be patient for? Bethlehem story is like a month away. I'll get to meet my husband then. Well, Bethlehem story came and went, and I did not meet anybody new. And then I remembered what God had said. He said, my husband would see me dressed as an angel. Not that I would meet him, but that my husband would see me. And so I was like, okay, well, God told me to be patient, so I'm just going to be patient. And then also in that Bible study, I met a woman named Jeannie, And she invited me to come to a Bible study at her house. They had taken a break over the Christmas, November, December. But they were going to start meeting again after in January. I was like, oh, sure. You know, I was so hungry for the Lord then. I wanted so much of the Lord. And so this was in January of 2014. I was 33. And me and Jeannie were the only ones from our church there. There were actually, everybody else came from all different churches. I think there was maybe six of us there that first night. But it really came down to probably five of us that were in the core group that came all the time. So I came in, sat down, and Jeannie introduced me to everybody, and then Joseph was the last person to come in, and he sat down, and Jeannie introduced us, and she said, oh, he went to Bethlehem Story, and he was like, oh, yeah, that was really cool, and Jeannie said, you know, Annette was an angel in Bethlehem Story, and he was like, oh, yeah, I have a picture of that on my phone, and he had actually taken a picture of the angels up on the stage, so... And I thought, wow, maybe this is the guy, you know? And no, like, bells or whistles went off. You know, there wasn't a shining light, like, oh, like, nothing like that. So God didn't say. And I remembered, you know, God told me to be patient. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to be patient. And so we just kept going to this Bible study for the next 10 months. And then in October that year, Joseph came in and he was talking about how he was going to be doing, going to be leading the Kairos 4-day prison ministry thing, that it was his turn to lead. But then his cousin was getting married on the very same weekend. And he's like, what am I going to do? I'm supposed to be leading this program. And his best friend, his cousin, was getting married. And he was really upset that he wasn't going to be coming. And so he was like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. So then I was really looking forward to hearing how his weekend went. You know, we all prayed for him and all of that. And then it was going to be the last Bible study of the year, and it ended up getting canceled. So I was like, oh man, I really wanted to hear how it went. And so I texted Jeannie and asked her how it went for Joseph. And she's like, I don't know, but here's his number. You can call him. I was like, okay. So I texted him, asked how it went. And he was like, well, why don't you let me take you out to dinner and I'll tell you all about it. So we went out to dinner, and on the way there, I remember he told me that he was about to turn 52, so he was 18 years older than me, and I was like, oh, this is not going to work. I think there's no way. I'm like, okay, that's all right. We'll go out and have a nice dinner and be friends, and that'll be that. So on the way there, I decided to just tell him every awful thing about myself, and then that way he wouldn't want to see me again, and then I wouldn't have to be like, okay, I don't want to see you because of your age. Because what Christian guy is going to want me who, after I've been with all these guys and stuff? And I was just, you know, that was what the enemy was telling me. And so during dinner, that's what I did. I told him all this crap about me, and then he just sat calmly and listened, and then he told me some things about himself that he was ashamed of. And you know, I just felt like, wow, he didn't judge me. He didn't run away, you know, and I ended up falling in love with him that night. Just fell in love with him. I was like, okay, I'm not going to tell him. I don't want to scare him away. But a couple weeks later, he actually told me that he was falling in love with me, and I told him I was already there. So we got engaged a few months later. And so we were married in May of 2015, about 7 months after we started dating. And we definitely did not live happily ever after, like I thought we would. And we both had just a ton of baggage going into our marriage and a lot of issues to work through, both of us. And we communicate very differently and struggled throughout the marriage. And I didn't really, you know, I just kept working at it, And ended up earlier this year staying at my dad's house for a couple weeks. He went up north to visit family, so I stayed at his house to babysit his dog. And during that 2 weeks, I just really got to take a step back and really evaluate our marriage, and I just realized how bad things had gotten and that it wasn't getting better. It was only getting worse. And so I went back home for a week after that, and then we ended up separating. And the divorce was finalized last month. So we were married for 6 years. And I have prayed, and I've asked God if I should return to Joseph. But God has not told me to return to him. He didn't tell me to leave him either, but he did not tell me to return to him. I've also asked God for his forgiveness, and I feel that he has forgiven me. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God wanted us to be married, and I agonized over my decision to leave for years. I don't regret marrying Joseph, and I still care about him very much. And this was the most difficult decision that I ever had to make. But I feel it was the best thing for both of us. So where's God in all that? Well, I know for a fact that he wanted this to be part of my testimony. I know that was not God's best, but it isn't a surprise to him. When Anna gave me the dates at the beginning of the year, there were tons of dates still open. Nobody had really signed up yet. And I prayed and asked God when he wanted me to do my testimony, and he told me October. So obviously he wanted this to be part of this testimony that I'm giving today. I learned so much through our marriage. Things that I wouldn't have learned being single. I learned how to stick up for myself and not to be taken advantage of. I had gone from guy to guy, giving them everything I could, and that was not healthy for me or the person I was with, and God showed me how to stop doing that. God also showed me that I can't fix anyone but myself. I always wanted to fix guys, and God showed me that I can only fix myself with his help, and I can't fix anybody else. So I learned really how to just let go and let God and trust him and trust that he's in control and that he's working. I remember years ago, I told God that I knew I needed to trust him, but I didn't know how to trust him. And I needed him to show me how to trust God. And God's response floored me. He said, "I'm going to prove to you that you can trust me." I mean, what? That God would actually say that. Like, I'm going to prove it to you. And he used my marriage to Joseph to show me just that. I let all my guards down with Joseph. I let him be every part of me. I learned how to love unconditionally, how to forgive someone, how to let go of grudges. I learned that the love shown in fairy tales and Disney movies isn't real. And now that it's all over, I'm still standing. And I thought that if our marriage ended, that it would be the end of me. You know, that was what the enemy was telling me. But it wasn't. It wasn't. And God's still here with me, and I love him so much more than I ever did. And God showed me, too, that I wanted a husband more than I wanted a relationship with him. And now all I want is Jesus. When I describe my perfect husband as Jesus, that's good for me. I'm good there. Just stay there. So God did prove to me that I could trust him. And I know how to trust him now. And he is my one constant in this ever-changing world that I can always count on to be there. And that's it.